So this morning, I'd like to talk about the chant that we recited by wonderful Zen Master Keizan. And it's a very short one, but I was so moved when I saw it included in our new book. And it goes, "Seeking it yourself with empty hands, you return with empty hands. In that place where fundamentally nothing is acquired, you really acquire it." And so the first line where it goes, "Seeking it yourself with empty hands, you return with empty hands," reminded me of that phrase that we come into the world with nothing and we leave it with nothing. And this has been so apparent to me recently because part of my days I take care of my 5-month-old grandson, and his hands, he struggles to hold on to anything, you know. It's quite an amazing thing to watch him just concentrating so hard to try to grab something, and his hands turn up empty, his lovely little pudgy empty hands. And the other part of my days, I spend quite a bit of time taking care of someone who's very dear to me and very elderly and soon will die. And his hands, too. Last week was intended to grab a bar in the bathroom, and his hands couldn't hold it and gave way. And he fell and just hurt himself terribly, and he looks just frightful. But there he is, an old man with hands empty. No, nothing can be held onto. And so this very beautiful image of the baby who can't hold on to anything and the old man who can't hold on to anything, you know, there we are, right? It seems to me that all of my worries and strivings and pettiness seem so inconsequential when there's just these empty hands coming and going. And when all of that is gone, you know, what is left, right? For me, when this man dies, I'm not sure I'll know how to be in the world. He means that much to me. So I think that is maybe part of what is left with these empty hands. And the next line that goes, "In that place where fundamentally nothing is acquired, you really acquire it." So where else could that place be, right? Except our own lives. Fundamentally, nothing is acquired. Empty hands into the world, empty hands when we leave. Nothing at all acquired. Nothing can be grasped in this wonderful, brief life that we are all privileged to have. You really acquire it, huh, in this life. And so this is a poem by Zen Master Keizan, and I remembered that, you know, it was part of the collection of koans that we do called The Transmissions of the Light. And so this is his beautiful poem. He has so many beautiful poems in that collection. And his expression of the koan. So I thought I would read you the koan. And it goes, "One day, Yang Zhu said to Tong Gan, 'If you want to attain such a thing, you must be such a person. As you are already such a person, why do you worry about such a thing?'" And so this first line where he goes, "If you want to attain such a thing, you must be such a person." And that reminded me so much of the chant that we did, you know, was it this morning? I'm already losing track of time. But, you know, if there is pain, I choose to feel. You know, if there is joy, I choose to be happy. You know, this kind of turning toward that which arises. And if you want to attain such a thing, Ah, you must be such a person. And then the next line, so good to the point, you know, as you are already such a person, why do you worry about such a thing? So no need to choose anything, right? You are already such a person, all of us, you know, already here, nothing needed. I think, you know, we all come to Zen practice, you know, with some big question, right? I don't think you would choose this practice unless something was really eating at you, you know? It'd be so much easier to be Episcopalian. But, you know, I think we've all found that wanting, you know? And so we just come with this burning question that won't let us be, you know? We talk about the dog with the bone, you know, not giving it up, that iron ball that's lodged in your throat and you can't swallow it and you can't spit it out, right? And maybe, you know, that maybe is like very necessary, right? To have that big question. This koan also reminds me of, you know, Dogen's big question, you know, like, well, if it's already here, you know, why do I need to practice anything? I think we all have that, you know, some kind of variation on that going on for us. But here, Keizan, you know, just this kindly teacher from the ages speaking to us right here, alive for each one of us, alive for me for sure. And he says, why do you worry about such a thing? You know, so such kindness. No, you know, hit with the kiyosaku, you know, no upbraiding. Just, why do you worry about such a thing? So that wonderful, deep kindness that we all know, and those empty hands, you know, coming into the world, leaving the world, and the empty hands of our Zazen mudra, right? All that we need. Thank you. So now I invite you to sit comfortably if you like, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue to talk about whatever.
When we read it today, I was forgetting that you had probably requested it of Steve. I thought it was Steve's choice. Really appreciate it. But then I love that you brought in the koan that's attached to it, that it's attached to. Mm-hmm. It's such a great koan. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a straightforward teaching. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. It was helpful to me to hear that reminder. Mm-hmm. Because this thing about striving is really hard to understand. Because mm-hmm. we all do come in, as mm-hmm. you said, with this yearning, and mm-hmm. to just somehow be with it rather than trying to make it into something is so difficult. Mm-hmm. And so I think you pointed to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to me, so impossible to intellectualize about it, you know, but in this beautiful poem, you know, I can visualize these hands, you know, your hands, my hands, right? Here, so poignant, you know, that they represent, you know, that nothing can be grasped, right? Just, and what more do you need than, you know?
What it was bringing up for me this morning was, it started, I guess, when we were doing the chants earlier, and I was thinking this word emptiness always gets to me because it's sort of confusing in the same way that last night when we were trying to talk about happiness, mm-hmm. and that doesn't really capture the experience at all of what we're talking about. And Mm-hmm. I think I've had the same reaction to emptiness. It always sort of leaves me a little bit puzzled, like I'm not sure exactly what it means. And I guess I mentioned to somebody last night in Doksan, I think David, that I had just come back from a very exciting, rich trip where I had everything that I had ever wanted. And I spent the time feeling kind of empty in a different way of thinking about, oh, I'm going to lose it. It's going to be over. It's not going to be enough. And then as I was talking about it last night, I was thinking about what does empty mean? I mean, it was like everything. And in some ways, that baby and your older person you're talking about also, are their hands are full of everything. It's like the whole world is in their hands. Mm-hmm. The whole world. And so it's a funny concept. It's not something you can hold on to, and yet it is very much a something. I just don't know how to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a something you buy or something you take home and put on a shelf, but it truly is something. Right? I've bought lots of things I can put on shelves. That's not what I think I really take away from it. But there is a something, and I don't know how to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And empty doesn't quite capture it in the sense that it makes it seem like it's a not something. Mm-hmm. It's just confusing to me, but it's helpful to keep hearing about it from different perspectives.
And I love that you said the hands are full. You know, that's such a beautiful way of portraying it too, right? And you know what? I never liked the word emptiness either.
I always see it. Yeah. Doesn't really clarify
English
words. Words together.
Yeah. We know it's a translation. It's a 19th century translation that we're kind of stuck with because we have all these texts that talk about form and emptiness. Yeah. But I think it's a translation of shunyata, right? Uh-huh. Which doesn't really mean empty in terms of like a voidness, but it just what you're saying, Carolyn. It's this fullness, this sort of the pregnant void is what it's called, like full of possibility. There's nothing to get in the way, so everything can come and go. Yeah. So that's it's hard to talk about.
I don't know what you think of this, but I think the word suchness, right?
Oh, I like
emptiness.
Suchness.
Do they just trade them off?
Or thusness is
thusness.
Word. Thusness.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Suchness.
Mm-hmm. That again gets at something like we were talking about last night, something about the vividness, maybe, of the experience.
Right.
The alive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
The aliveness.
Yeah.
The vividness.
Yeah. Because for us, so often, like the word empty could connote like void, you know, dull void, you know.
Right,
like,
and it's obviously not what we mean by it, so it's confusing to use a term that's almost the opposite of what of the sense that you actually are trying to convey.
Mm-hmm. Right, and in psychology, it usually points to some dysfunction.
Yeah.
There's an empty feeling.
Right, so even if you try to say, oh, that's not what they mean, those associations are all there. It's hard to use the word.
Let's put out a new edition of the chant.
Thank you. Janine?
I just really appreciated your talk. It was so lovely and personal. And I loved the images of the hands. And something that came up for me, I'm recovering from shoulder surgery, and so I'm doing these exercises to get my range of motion and strength back in this arm. And there's this one exercise I just started, and the physical therapist wrote down, you're holding a cord out here, and she wrote, the body turns away from the hand. So, and I've had problems with it, you know, I'm trying to figure what does that mean. And when I was doing this exercise last night, I thought, oh, the body turns away from the hand. It just made sense for me with the hand is so much the thing that we direct our striving towards, where the body will just naturally turn. Mm-hmm. And so to not think about the striving and the wanting and the grasping and the hanging on, but to just turn away and be with the body was that came up for me really strongly with this. So now I have this little exercise go on.
Looks like Mike was
making some
interesting. Yeah.
So, thank you for your talk. I also noticed the poem when we read it and really liked it. And find that we have so many contradictions in our teachings, and here's yet another one for us. Mm-hmm. And I like how you, I felt, you embodied that contradiction very nicely in your talk as well. In the sense of, you know, we may have this kind of important recognition of empty-handedness or impermanence, or and yet. Thank you.
Christine? I could feel, as I listen to you, and thank you so much, this surrender. And I was so inspired by the two talks yesterday about just being what is, and I got a chance to see how I do the if-onlys in spades last night, where I just, and this morning, and all this stuff started happening where I make my conditions, like my pellet stove broke, and my body, I don't know what I can and can't do with it, and I could really feel the holding, and I was in so much pain last night, I thought, can I even continue? And I got up this morning, and I just felt like, I don't know, can I hold, what can I or can't I do, and then I just surrendered into just finding out, and I did my exercises, and I thought, I'll just find out, and move into the moment. And then as I got here, I was wondering, am I doing the right thing? You know, I so relate to the both sides of holding. And then being here and listening to you, it was just like, I could just feel everything in me melt. And I don't know the answer. It's just moment to moment. And so is that empty hand. It's just appearing empty, but it's full. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Oh, okay, that was the little hands and the old hands are empty. But the contents of you are different because of it. Full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, and I love how we play with this full and empty. Mm-hmm. And we think we know empty means empty and full means full. But of course, when we're truly with it, we see form, emptiness, full, empty, this vast field of aliveness manifesting now as a little baby, now as old man, now as tears of sorrow, now as tears of fullness, and we can't tell. Yeah. How wonderful.
And I want to go back to Christine's insight a little bit about surrendering, like realizing the power of surrender. We try to be in charge of everything, you know, and you're clearly seeing that's not working, right? Because you just don't know. You think you know, but the reality is, no idea what's going to happen or unfold from this, that, or the other thing. So I was thinking of the word surrender just before you said it from some of the things that other people said. I think it's a key thing here in this particular teaching.
And it's so tender. And the other part feels so hard, but I just can't find words.
Yeah, right. And you can't, if you encounter hardness, you can't make it tender. And that goes back to that line in the koan. What is it? The teacher says you're already...
As you are already such a person, why do you worry?
As you're already such a person. So that the tightness, if you try to make it soft, it just gets tighter. It's like one of those little Chinese finger puzzles. You just keep trying to pull out. I'll get out of this. I know what to do. And then really all this surrendering, the fingers come together and they're loose and you can get one out. So this is a very important teaching in our way. It doesn't mean to give up, but there is a quality of giving something up. It's giving up what's not the root of the self. Right, it's giving up all the extra stuff that we've created. We changed the word in the repentance gatha, in the gatha of atonement, from committed to created. You know, all the evil karma ever committed by me. I said committed today because I was arrogant and wasn't reading it. But it's like this endless creation of the self that hardens and hardens and hardens. Yeah. So thank you for that word.
So this striving the word that I was thinking of that then people said fullness, which I think is pretty much the same idea. I was thinking wholeness. And I love the koan piece that you brought up about striving after this wholeness, because I have this this feeling of not being whole, and so there's this striving after trying to achieve this wholeness. And how beautiful, how could you become whole if you aren't already whole? Right? There is no way, and the teachings keep telling us over and over again, you already fundamentally have this wholeness, right? And here I am, striving after something, and it's this striving itself is creating the feeling that I don't have, the thing that I'm looking for. So, you might think that the answer to that is to stop striving, right? But that isn't actually how it seems to work for me. This idea that I'm broken and I need to attain something, rather than trying to get rid of that, to allow myself to just be with this feeling of incompleteness and striving and not needing to even push that away. It's okay to want to strive. What a power! This is the thing that powers my practice, is this striving. And even if I could give it up, I would be reluctant to do so entirely. I mean, it's a source of irritation and pain and suffering to me. But on the other hand, it's also the thing that drives me forward. And there are moments when we sink into this striving and this brokenness and if you're lucky, your heart will break and there it is revealed that we're already whole, and what a thing, empty and fullness, and then of course it closes back into the striving again. But this, that's the practice, is to just be even with that that striving.
I think of Moshe Feldenkrais that has one thing he wrote at one point that's somehow that great people use their strengths, but a genius uses her weakness. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. All of us here are neurotic. Every human being, there's a place. Yeah, we're found out. A place where we are grasping, where we're caught, and we begin to see again and again, oh, there I go. But that this could be, that we could use this, that we already are using it, and that our practice, we think, is about getting rid of that on some level. Okay, if I really practice hard, then I won't be reactive, I won't, you know, I'll finally... But this possibility, this wild possibility, that the very neurosis itself, the very problem, is our life, is the most precious gift. And if we can use the energy of our neurosis, like, we're home free. I mean, I don't know about you, but it comes up again and again. My clinging is utterly dependable. I will go to that place. So if that's not a problem, but that is the manifestation, then energy is not a problem. I've got lots of it. I just thought it was bad.
Well, that's what Aiken was saying yesterday in the text we looked at, that it has tremendous power for the way.
Yeah, right.
And you know, I'm just so struck by what you're both saying, that the how insane it is actually to think that the way I'm going to become whole is by chopping off parts of myself.
Right, right.
It's insane. And I love that you brought up the cool quoting Wu Men, the red hot iron ball, which is a part of the commentary on the koan Mu. But that's what it feels like. Anybody who works on Mu will recognize this. Or maybe 10 seconds, eventually. But somebody else had brought that up to me the other day, and it's just such a great vivid image for, if I could only get rid of this. And Wu Men doesn't say get rid of it. He just says, this is what it's like. and it's like, oh, I recognize that myself. That's just delightful. So you must be a mind reader. You haven't done Dokusan yet, but you know what's rising in the field, this field. It's very strong for us. This, well, it's in the dog with a bone from last night. That's another. I can let it go. Yeah, and of course you don't let it go, right? That's what you're pointing at. The bone is me. The little ball is me. The ache in the belly, the sore shoulder, whatever, the ache in the heart. Yeah, and the striving, I love that you bring that up. And it is paradoxical, as Michael's pointing out. But it's not paradoxical to the heart. Once you get this wholeness thing, it's like, it's a no-brainer. Literally.
And I really like the second line in the first thing you read, that in the place, what is it, in the place where nothing is attainable?
Where fundamentally nothing is acquired.
Fundamentally nothing is acquired. It's always such a relief to me to hear that, that's the field we're playing in.
Right.
That, because it, you know, I want something to put on my shelf. And if I don't have something to put on my shelf, I think, well, geez, everybody else must have something. But to name that we're all playing in this field, we're fundamentally open hands when we come in, open hands when we get out. No way to grasp anything. And that this is the place where we attain.
And I have to say, this is hard to understand. Because we've gotten what we wanted through our efforts in so many areas, and for this to be not a place of effort, it's like an effortless effort, because there still is effort in it. There's showing up to it. There's being present to it. It just doesn't click. The mind wants to fix and repair and cut off and delete. So I think there's some way that we have to be humbled. We have to, you know, this is like when Bodhidharma said, I don't know who I am, to the Emperor of China. He wasn't kidding, because you can't actually know this wholeness. It's so vast. There's no way to know it. It's just all we can do is encounter it moment to moment. Let's encounter some more.